Welcome to the Money Insights Podcast, where high income earners come to learn wealth building strategies that will take them from high income to high net worth. With your hosts, financial and wealth building experts, Christian Allen and Rod Zabriskie.
Welcome into today's episode of the Money Insights Podcast. I'm your host, Christian Allen. With me, as always, Rod the Pod Zabriskie. Rod, what's up, my friend?
Hey, I am doing great. Loving the swing of summer.
Summer's nice. Are you guys doing anything fun for the summer? Family, friends?
Yeah.
What's going on in the Zabriskie household? Let's give us a quick update. Nothing too crazy, Rod. Let's not get carried away, but give us a quick update. And then we'll get into our topic for today.
Yeah. So summer, we have camping trips, time on the lake.
Classic.
And family reunion. My mother-in-law turns 90 this year.
Holy smokes. So
we're
bringing in people from all over
for family reunion.
Sounds like fun. Well, I'm going to Disneyland in a couple weeks. I'm then going to New York right after that. So July is going to be a busy month of traveling. So it should be fun.
Coast to coast.
Coast to coast. Okay, Rod, today we're talking about a subject we haven't really broached this subject before, but
yeah,
I'm excited about it. I think it's intriguing. I think it's a really cool framework. So the podcast outline, our title is called Think Like a Billionaire, How to Build Your Own Mini Family Office. Now, to be fair, some of you might have enough wealth at this point in time where you can just build a completely, totally legit, massive family office. Typically, that's going to be like your 30 million plus situation. So if you fit into that category, like you might actually just try to go structure and create not a mini version, but just an actual version. Mm-hmm. Today, we're going to talk about the principles that are necessary to create your family office, because here's the deal. It doesn't matter whether you have 5 million or 50 million. The principles that we're going to be talking about, the principles that are used in these family offices, are there for a reason. There's like real purpose behind it. And the reason people do it, the reason wealthy families do that is because it's a proven path to build wealth in an efficient way. And there's a lot of reasons why we'll get into in a second. But any thoughts on family offices before we jump into it, Rod?
No, I think we'll hit on all this stuff. I'm excited to do it.
Okay. So the starting point has to be, what is a family office? Because can I just tell you, for some years, embarrassingly enough, even while I was in the industry, it was a little fuzzy to me what a family office actually consisted of, because I would hear it used in multiple different contexts, right? And so it just got a little bit confusing. So here's what I'm going to ask you to do for our audience, Rod. Can you please help us understand better as a starting point what the we don't have to get in all the details, but at least the high-level framework of what a family office is, so that we can then grab those principles and build them into our own mini family office.
Yeah. So it's basically your own private wealth management firm, and it brings together all the different elements of that, which would include the investing arm, strategic tax advising, estate planning, insurance, legal entities,
philanthropy.
Yep.
There's one other one that I want to throw in with you, Rod.
Yeah, go for it.
Family governance and education.
Yeah.
It's another element. And I think this is important because this is one of the things that you often see missing in like traditional financial planning. And, you know, once that goes to the next generation, like you start to see a little bit of that. But part of the whole family office creation is to integrate the full family. Right.
Yes.
To integrate people, understand roles, responsibilities, and make sure that wealth transfer is happening in the most efficient, most impactful way it possibly can. And then the other thing, and maybe you're going to say this, and if it is, I'm still in your thunder, Rod, is that there has to be coordination between the actual advisors. So one of the biggest benefits of a family office is that we have everybody working on the same team. So this is something we've been encouraging people to do for years and years, right? Create a team of advisors, not just, you know, advisors working in different directions and ends up being a juncture of advisors and advice that's hard to parse through. Mm-hmm. If you can get people playing on the same team, now you have an opportunity to like really make some things happen.
Absolutely. Yep. Huge okay. element, huge benefit.
Okay. Did that? Okay. So actually I want you to do this though, Rod. Okay. Why in some context do people see it differently? Why would someone like me have been confused? Any ideas?
Well, I think it's because this term is used maybe to refer to different things. So in the truest form, it's inside of a family, and they're like the team or the group of advisors is employed by the family basically, or within the okay. family structure. Right.
You nailed it. So one example or thought here, let's just say that we were the Wrigley family. We made Wrigley gum right. and we're worth $300 or $400 million or maybe more than that. I don't even know. Mm-hmm. Wrigley's they hit it out of the ballpark, but that family would basically be Wrigley. Okay. They literally would employ an advisory group of people who were exclusively working for their family. So yeah. your legal people, your financial, and all of those people would like typically just be part of the team that manages, let's say, the $500 million of wealth that the Wrigleys have, as an example.
Yeah. And it would have grown out of necessity maybe over time, right? So you have the accounting piece that you just needed. And so you had them early on, right? Oh, we're going to start investing. Okay. Now we're going to add some investing piece to it. And as the net worth, as the empire grows, the need grows for additional pieces, and then they add those additional pieces in. And I think probably in its original formation, it was just something that grew out of necessity. And then they started calling it a family office, right?
Yeah, I think that's 100% true. And then people saw that it was a track that you could go to that was creating success, and more and more people have adopted it. So it's very, very common for wealthy families to have that family office built. Okay. So that's the first one. And I think that's how I thought of it, but guess what? It gets a little bit more convoluted because that's not the only type of family office.
Well then, and this is going to maybe lean a little more towards the reason we brought this up for other people who maybe aren't that 500 million net worth groups, because then we've seen a lot of people use it where they're still the core, their family, whatever that looks like. Maybe they're, like you said earlier, maybe they're $30 million, $50 million net worth, and they're surrounding themselves by advisors who may or may not work for them exclusively, but still they're the core. They're the quarterback, and they're surrounding themselves with these different specialists to provide those.
You know what's
confusing about it?
Because now the family office is like, now the advisory group is considered a family office,
right?
So they're the family office, where like regardless of if they have one family or whether there's many of them. So it can be confusing. Again, when we typically think about it, like family first, they build out their advisory team. Nowadays, you have the other side where there's advisory groups that call themselves family offices, and they manage, you know, a handful or whatever. Maybe it's several, maybe it's a bunch, who knows? But at some level, they're not necessarily, they're just coming at it from the other direction, right?
Yeah.
And so anyway, just be aware that regardless of the context of the use of the word, the principles are pretty much the same. The principles are what we've talked about, right? It's bringing together all of these elements into one to create the best financial result for the family. And that's why we want to make sure that we're duplicating some of those things. So what we're going to do now is we're going to talk a little bit about how we can actually use those same principles that the family officer is using and make them really impactful in our own world. So we'll get to that here in just a second. But the first thing we have to talk about is that one of the biggest issues that high-income earners face is fragmented advice.
Yeah.
Right? So I touched on this for a second, but this is a huge issue. And it's understandable why it comes, right? Because like you said, it's always kind of a build. People don't just wake up one day and think, I need five advisors, right? It usually starts with one, and then they decide to bring another one in. And, you know, suddenly the first one's not talking to the second, and then you're getting different ideas, and it just can become confusing and chaotic.
Yep.
And so a lot of it, a lot of even high income people that could be fairly prolific in building wealth sometimes become confused because of this, the different voices that are coming to them. And typically it just, the only person that hurts is them. And it's one of those hard things because, you know, you've got to find the right people on your team. And sometimes that can be a difficult process, but you just need to make sure that the two or that the team members are working together on your behalf. And anytime that's not happening, it really is chaotic, right? If, I mean, well, I won't give an example.
I'll give a quick example.
Okay.
Cause this is, it's maybe a simplistic example, but it's one that we run into. And that is, we'll have somebody who will ask us our advice on how they should set up their beneficiaries in their, on their life insurance policy. And on the surface, it seems like a pretty simple question, right? Like, we're helping you set up the policy. How do you think I should handle the beneficiaries? And of course we have thoughts, we have ideas, but I'm always careful to mention to them, hey, if you have an estate planning attorney that you work with, you should involve them in this conversation. We don't want to be working in our own silo and then your estate planning attorney is working in their own silo and there's no coordination between the two. And sometimes I think it comes across to people like I'm, I don't know, avoiding giving a definitive opinion or things like that. And it's not that I lack opinion. It's that we're all better off if we can create the coordination between the two sides.
So the key, infrastructure. We have to have the infrastructure to make sure that each of those pieces are talking to one another. So typically, you either have to be the quarterback or one of those advisors will kind of act as the quarterback to make sure that everybody's being, you know, kind of kept in the loop on and what's going on. But again, it's just so much more powerful to have the different advisors working all together for your benefit. So make sure that's focused. Okay. I want to talk about the blueprint, Rod, the mini, not just the family office blueprint, the mini family office blueprint.
Yes.
Truth is they're very much the same, but a couple of things that are really important. And we're going to try to like apply it to our own kind of what we, the people we're talking to, like our clients, what's most frequent, what they're seeing out there. We're going to try to apply these principles to those specific situations. So we're leaving this, you know, $500 million world. We know that that exists out there. We're going to borrow some of the principles, but we're just going to leave that part of it behind. And we're going to really focus on what we're doing to grow and build our wealth. Okay. So five pillars, actually maybe six, but five pillars to start. Maybe I'll come up with a bonus pillar. So pillar number one, Rod, and this just sounds like me because I like preach this ad nauseum, right? Mm-hmm. And that is liquidity. Liquidity is critical. Now, the nice thing is most of us here have a really efficient way to build liquidity, right? We have our high cash value life insurance policy, the investment optimizer, and that ends up being a really powerful liquid place that we can grab cash. But at the core, we have to make sure that we're liquid. And here's the deal. Liquidity solves all of the other financial problems. I'm absolutely convinced that if you've got enough liquidity, then even when things are rough, we can make sure that we're, you know, getting through those difficult times and ending up okay on the other end. If I don't have liquidity, man, then it can just become ugly. So liquidity, first key.
Agreed. And I'll say this, the Investment Optimizer focuses on liquidity for investing, obviously.
Yep.
But then I personally, we have a lot of clients who will kind of dual purpose their policy and keep their emergency fund there. And some of the other, if they're a business owner, some of their business reserves sitting in the policy as that liquidity for the same reasons as we use them for the Investment Optimizer, right? Leaving money sitting in the bank for long periods of time, whether it be a savings account, high yield, you know, money market account, whatever. I just can't do as well in those places as what it will work for me inside of the policy with, you know, tax-free, et cetera. And so the policy can actually serve several of those liquidity buckets.
Yeah. Good point. Good point. So one of the things obviously that we love about, and one of the reasons that this Investment Optimizer is a core part of what we do is because it's so versatile, right? We're letting our money do more for us. It's doing more than one job at a time. If we're allowing it to obviously both be in a place that's growing, getting tax benefits, and acting as our opportunity fund that we can take advantage of. Okay, so the first thing is we got to have liquidity. Pillar number two, we're going to call it strategic leverage. We oftentimes talk about conservative leverage. Yep. So we talk about conservative leverage, just meaning that, you know, and really the main reason that we talk about it in that way is because we want to make sure that whenever we're talking about the value of leverage, that we're emphasizing that it has to be done with intention, has to be deliberate, has to be thoughtful. And if I can do it that way, then it ends up being just an incredibly powerful, powerful tool for wealth building. But there's people who know from experience the hard side of leverage too. So again, the core there is that it's strategic leverage, and there's different ways that that can happen. So as an example, one element of leverage is just using the investment optimizer as a strategy in general, because obviously the cash still continues to grow. And I now have the policy doing two things at once, where it's used to invest, but of course I'm borrowing against it. The cash is acting as collateral for the loan. And by doing that, again, I'm quite literally creating more value. I'm actually using a form of leverage, not the leverage that we typically think about when we go like an 80-20 loan on a bank, but we are utilizing leverage even in that moment in a way that, especially over a long period of time, ends up producing significant results. So strategic leverage is the second one, Rod. What would you, do you have anything to add to that?
Yeah, by extension, when you do talk about the 80-20 or 75-25, I'm putting a 25% down payment to go buy a piece of property. That's coming from what you've been talking about, investment optimizer. And then I go and use a traditional lender for the other 75%. And that's when I'm now bringing additional advisors into the picture. And again, it's going back to the family office concept. We need to keep that coordinated. So for our part, as we're working with people on the investment optimizer side, and that obviously represents liquidity that a bank is or a lender is interested in when they're looking to lend to you. And so that coordination can happen and hopefully is happening anytime someone's doing that.
Can I just tell you, this thought came to my head, is this is totally off topic, but this is another reason that I don't like the be your own bank concept, because it infers the idea that you're literally going to start becoming your own bank and you're just going to wipe, banks are going to be out of the equation. Well, guess what? That is not typically the most effective way to build wealth. If I can use, again, strategic leverage where I'm building the cash and the policy, creating the value I get there, but then I still need to continue to use strategic leverage, I'm going to get so much further if I take my down payment from my cash and I still use a bank loan, again, assuming I'm getting it in relatively favorable terms. Yeah. Because there's only so much capital that we can build individually. And so that leverage element kind of has different pieces. Okay. So, but family office blueprint, pillar number two is strategic leverage. Pillar number three, Rod, and this is where I'm going to promote our IIS events here in just a second, but deal flow. You have to have opportunities. One of the biggest challenges that we've seen as we've been in this space and, you know, writing high cash value life insurance for high income earners looking to invest is that they don't know enough places to invest. Like they, and so what ends up happening often is they find a couple people that do a good job and they end up going all in on it because they don't have enough exposure to a lot of different opportunities. So why am I saying this? Because one of our goals is, and we kicked off the IIS, our first Investment Insider Series event yesterday with Chris Larson. The goal is to help people have better access to deal flow, right? Deal flow that just to create opportunity and exposure to where you can tap into this community and actually find places that I could consider in investing. So anyway, deal flow is obviously a critical piece. If I don't have deal flow, then the investment side of thing obviously isn't going to run. So I've got to have that.
Yes. And that's where, again, borrowing principles from family office, in most cases, our client becomes quarterback, and they're surrounding themselves with these providers, coaches, you know, whatever the form that might take as they're investing in these deals that then they can have, again, first of all, access, but then secondly, coordinating the different pieces. And now I'm using the principles that we often talk about in terms of diversification and intentionality toward whatever my future goals are, whether it be cash flow, whether it be appreciation, you know, whatever that might be, the tax benefits that I can get out of those investments, being very intentional anytime I'm selecting an opportunity. It's not just because, oh, it sounds great, but because, yes, it sounds great and is aligned with these things that I am, specific goals that I'm trying to accomplish.
Yeah, that's a great point. Super critical, super critical. Okay, so really quick, Rod, we talked about liquidity, strategic leverage, deal flow. Pillar number four is wide. It is large and encompasses a great deal, and we're putting it under structure and tax efficiency. Well, structure is talking about anything legal related, right? So we always talk about making sure that we have the correct legal entities, trusts, and then, of course, tax planning is just constantly critical. I say it, I feel like in every episode that the IRS, like that's our big, the biggest expense that we'll ever have, and it's not close. And so if we can just do a little bit even to create an additional level of efficiency and pay a little less tax, it can have an enormous impact on what we're able to build from a wealth standpoint. So making sure the structure is in place so that you're protecting yourself in case, not in case, bad things just happen. Difficult situations come about. That's just the way it is, right? We can tell 100 stories of different difficult situations that come about. And yet, if I have the right elements in place from a structure standpoint, then I can protect myself and make sure that, you know, a bad situation doesn't become worse by then impacting my finances in a really negative and difficult way.
Right, right.
So that's super critical.
And this is a broad category because now this starts to encompass attorneys in different levels. So if when I'm setting up my legal structure, obviously I work with a qualified attorney that can help advise me on the difference between a LLC and limited partnership or whatever, like all those different options that exist and the reasons both in terms of asset protection, but also the my ability to take advantage of tax opportunities often depends on the structure that I choose, et cetera. So attorneys, CPAs, or other tax professionals are going to fit in there. And then also on the estate planning side, making sure I'm setting up the structure, that the legal entity, whatever that looks like, that will then help on that. So it's broad, but we put it in one category because really it's that, well, again, structure. It's the pieces that I have in place that direct either the money flow or the benefits, and from a tax standpoint or estate or asset protection or these different things, different purposes behind it, because the structure allows me to accomplish those things.
Okay, so that leads us nicely into pillar number five, Rod, which is the estate planning or legacy pillar. And maybe just talk about why that's a critical piece of the overall mini family office composite.
I think this becomes one of those things that is a little bit, not a little bit, it's a difficult topic because typically people are following through a flow where they set up their LLCs or limited partnerships or things like that. And again, they're thinking about asset protection or taxes on when they're doing that. And then they get to a place where they go and sit down with an estate planning attorney and they say, oh, we need to structure all your things like this. And it's different than what they already had. Because when everything's optimized toward tax benefits or asset protection, it isn't necessarily optimized for estate planning. And there are reasons for that, right? Including the complexity of, well, now if I'm trying to move things out of my estate, I have to have a trustee that makes all the moves on my behalf. I may still be making the decisions, but someone else has to carry them out. There's a different level of complexity that comes with that. But at a certain point, it's worth it, right? So again, now this gets back into the whole integration and coordination thing. And I would say anytime you're working with your estate planning attorney, if they're not already asking about what have you already done, which they will, right? They'll say, well, what is there? But you also need to be really clear about, well, this is why I set up this piece this way or this piece that way. And I'll give a quick example on that from the life insurance side. when a traditional estate planning attorney sees life insurance, they think one thing. Oh, we want this death benefit to land outside of your estate. So we need to set up an irrevocable life insurance trust or an ILET to own that insurance. And for most cases, if it's just pure insurance is the reason behind reason I got the insurance, the policy, then that's great. But if my policy is an investment optimizer policy and the attorney moves that into an ILET, it may not still serve the same purpose in terms of accessibility of cash to go out and invest with, right? So
yeah, those are like just totally different purposes, right? And so exactly. Like they have to understand the purpose behind it. Death benefit, one purpose. And really it's the difference between being a death benefit and a living benefit. And yes. So sometimes it becomes difficult to kind of get their mind around this idea that we're using it as a living benefit to enhance or to for wealth creation purposes. And you're right. Immediately they just go straight to get that thing in an ILET, no longer in your estate. I can't come up with any reason not to do it, except the reason that now you can't invest the money that's in there.
Right.
So that's a reason. And there's things you can do, right? Like once you get to the right place, you can get a little more sophisticated in your planning to create some of those benefits. But the reality is for most people that are early on, this is a good example. It just isn't going to make a lot of sense to put that money into an ILET.
Right.
And so, Rod, that brings us nicely into the bonus pillar number 6. And that is, you already said it, like the coordination, the integration part, the coordination between all of the advisors. So If the right hand is talking to the left, then you don't have those kinds of issues, right? Yep. If everybody knows that this policy is structured the way that it is for investing, then your attorney is not going to be sitting there saying, oh yeah, let's go do this.
Mm-hmm.
They're going to say, oh, we can't do that with that because of this purpose. Now, They might suggest that there could be other life insurance that would make sense as purely a death benefit play that would go into an irrevocable life insurance trust. So, yeah, good point. Good point.
And there will come a time, or if there comes a time where the attorney is saying, the estate planning attorney is saying, okay, we need to start moving all of your assets out of your estate into a trust. Now, if all of your investments exist in that trust, well, then of course you should move your investment optimizer policy into that same trust so that the flow of money is all happening within the same entity, right? So we're for sure not saying that it shouldn't ever be in that the investment optimizer policy should never be in the trust. There comes a time where it would make sense, but only if everything else is being moved as well.
Yeah, it just has to be in alignment with the overall strategy, the overall plan, which again, comes back to the key element of a family office, which is coordinating between all of your many advisors. Yes. As I think about it, Rod, that's probably like, that might be the most just powerful concept within the family office structure. Just the bottom line is now you've got everybody working together for one purpose, which can be difficult. Think about like the financial services industry is just wrought with conflict of interests everywhere, conflicts of interest. So like so frequently advisors start right from the get-go in defense mode of the other advisor, right? Mm-hmm. So it's like advisor A, investment advisor is into the picture, let's just say theoretically. And then somebody wants to bring in an insurance advisor. Well, oftentimes those people cross over in what they can do. And now there's this level of like, oh, are they going to steal my business? Is this going to be and now instead of creating the synergy that you want to create, you've actually just created conflict and chaos. So again, the family office structure brings in this incredibly valuable element of making sure that everybody's working together for one purpose. Yep. And it's hard to get that alignment, but when you do, it's just incredibly powerful. Okay. So we want to just wrap up and reiterate a couple of key ideas, a couple of key thoughts. Number one is you don't have to be ultra wealthy to act like you're ultra wealthy, right? To grow wealth like you're ultra wealthy. You can, and this is really interesting because like the time that we live in today is pretty fun and unique in the sense that basically all of the tools and things that were available to the ultra wealthy have started to trickle down and become nearly as available to just everybody else. So it's like, we're not in this place where you know, there's no way for me to get access to a hedge fund as a regular investor, for example. Mm-hmm. There's lots of places I could go to get involved in hedge funds as just an accredited investor. You know what I mean? So it's kind of a fun point there. But the point again is you just don't have to be that wealthy in order to act and do and behave and create this kind of mini family office setup. So that's the first thing. And then the other thing I would say is make sure that you join the IIS series, Rod, because we're putting out deals. Now, let me be really clear. We're not putting out deals. We're creating exposure to deals. And the reason I'm emphasizing this so much is because this is one of those questions we just get constantly over the years. The whole goal of this is to create opportunities or deal flow, to put deals in front of your eyes that you can then go and do due diligence on, understand better, see if it's a good fit for you, so that you're not ending up in these cycles where you're trying to figure out where to put your money out. The good news is if it's just sitting there, at least it's sitting in your policy, earning 5 or 6% interest. But that's still not the goal. The end goal has to be to get my money out and investing. So make sure you join our part of it. I think we're going to make sure that we do at least one every month. That's my goal, is to have at least one every month. There could be bonus ones here and there, so just keep your eyes open for it. But that's going to be a really great place to get just a variety of different opportunities. And also just say this, my other goal is to make sure that we're diversifying the kinds of opportunities that we're creating exposure for. So obviously we had Chris yesterday. We're going to be doing our friends, Passive Income Pilots, Turbine Capital, and
Spartan
Investment Group. And they do different things than Chris, but I also have some people lined up for the next month that are going to be more in like the business, like the VC world. And so we're really going to try to create opportunities to be exposed to many different things. And we hope it'll just kind of help you create this kind of mini family office setup that'll help you get to the next level. Okay, Rod, did I miss anything before we call it for today?
We didn't miss it, but I want to just go back to we talked briefly about this idea of coordination within the family.
Oh, yes. And, thank you.
And that exists mostly because the biggest problems that we've seen in wealth transfer is when there's lack of communication and coordination from one generation to the next. The children, none of them know what's coming when mom and dad die. Then they see the will or the trust and everything comes out. And then it's like, oh, well, why did they do this? And what about that? And jealousy and all this kind of stuff, bickering. Whereas if you're communicating and coordinating and people are at least understanding what's going on, especially because legacy is more about more than just the money. There can be a culture. There can be a your opportunity to share your values with your children, with that legacy, and you can do that really most effectively when there is this kind of communication and coordination among generations.
Okay, Rod, we're gonna call it family governance.
Okay.
Family governance. Right? Deal. I like that phrase. Jarvis came up with it for us. So, again, the idea behind family governance is that everybody knows their role, responsibilities, what to expect. Mm-hmm. And typically doing that relieves a lot of the potential frustrations, chaos that can come up. So anyway, I'm glad that you brought that up, Rod. That's like a bonus pillar, right? We have coordination and then we've got family governance. But the good news is if you take all of those pillars together and apply those things, you'll have your very own mini family office that can do all of the same things that these high-powered family offices are doing that, you know, are managing $1 billion. So our recommendation, our call to action, is to set up your mini family office. And we appreciate everybody hanging out with us. We'll see you next week.
Thank you for listening to the Money Insights Podcast. To learn more about the financial and business strategies discussed in this show, please visit moneyinsights.net. The views and opinions expressed on the Money Insights Podcast are not intended to be individual financial, tax, or legal advice. Always consult with the appropriate advisor before making financial decisions. And if you're enjoying the show, please feel free to rate, subscribe, and leave a review wherever you listen to your podcasts. This will help others find the show and learn wealth building strategies for themselves. Thanks again for tuning in, and we'll catch you in the next episode.